You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost hour. Culture, current events hour, Catholic faith, 50 minutes. Every afternoon. Big, exciting weekend. I guess one thing you can say about this new president, he works weekends, right? No problem there. Sign as many executive orders Saturday, Sunday, whatever. Get it all done. Get it knocked out. Big week. Got to get work done. So work ethic is important always. So if you want to try to find something good to say, right, that's what you like. Hey, you know, he's got a good work ethic. He's committed to the job. We're going to talk about this executive order when it comes to the refugee ban, what this means and what it doesn't mean. There's a lot of interesting things going on out there. We'll talk about that. Also, Christian reaction from religious leaders, not just Catholic, but also others. Interesting, to say the least. We look at kind of filtering the Christian Christian persecution, right? Looking at that. Then, of course, the news of this mosque shooting in Quebec, where things of this nature just aren't supposed to happen, right? It's Canada. It's Quebec. Why is this happening there? All of this and more, back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour.
If you enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you. You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Excited about the latest endeavor with Breadbox Media. This is the What If It Is True podcast, which allows us to go a little bit deeper into conversation, especially when it comes to guests and topics and just maybe a little bit more of stuff that we can explore together. Couple of those in the can at this point, and we'll be doing a whole lot more of them when it comes to maybe stretching out a little bit. One with an atheist friend of mine who used to be a Protestant minister. We talk a little bit about a lot of stuff. He'll be joining me frequently on the What If It Is True podcast. And then the first, at least in a two-part, maybe multi-part series with a sociologist friend of mine who managed to go on the Camino de Santiago and some really incredible takeaways for her. And I think what was fun in our conversation was kind of the discovery that we both made through this conversation of what it means to be on this journey and to be a seeker and to be a person of faith, or in her case, more spirituality than faith, but still some very interesting common ground to be found. So and I apologize about the audio on that one. We had just had some technical issues. And then the one with my atheist friend, we recorded in a bar as we're talking over drinks. So we'll try to clean up the audio a little bit on the next productions, but still some really good conversation. And if you enjoy that kind of stuff, I encourage you to head over to the podcast link on the sidebar of the app or at our website, breadboxmedia.com, and find the What If It Is True podcast. Some great conversations, some good stuff to discuss. Speaking of things we have to discuss, we've got to look at this recent situation when it comes to what this whole Muslim ban thing means, refugee ban, and is it a Muslim ban? That's what I meant to say. See, look, things just Freudianly slip out, and I didn't mean to do that, so I apologize. But as interesting as this is, I think the one thing that we have to understand is that whether it's what President Trump promised on the campaign trail of banning Muslims or not, this is a list of predominant Muslim countries. Now, you can say it's Islamic extremist hotbed areas. This is why this is the case. But Christian leaders have come out. Now, I posted this on my Facebook page from the New York Times, and the USCCB is quoted here as well, as basically saying, look, you know, this isn't a Christian. As Christians, we don't look at just taking care of our own. That's not a Christian ethic. Christians say we are Christ. We try to be Christ-like. We try to be followers of Christ and to say, how do we make this work for everybody? It's not just for us, right? Because that's the message of Christ. The message of Christ is it's for everybody. It's not for a select group. It's not for just a handful. If you were in Mass yesterday, you heard the reading of Mass when it comes to the Beatitudes, right? This is the new covenant. This is the new law. This is the giving of the new stuff, which basically talks all about how it's for everybody. And that's what we certainly believe. And the other thing that I posted this on my Facebook page, and I still think it's largely misunderstood. Refugeeism is not illegal immigration. Refugeeism is a very specific type of allowance of undoubted, legally vetted and processed individuals who are leaving their country because of persecution. Now, to ban a process that is already quite extensive is an interesting move. And I had a lot of conversation on this on the Facebook post, and one individual saying this is theater, which unfortunately is affecting people who really need help. And if that is the case, that's such a shame that we would allow this type of dynamic to take place at the expense of individuals. And the other thing is just the interpretation of this and what it's led to, and the people waiting to be reconnected or to return to their homes and from other countries. It's just a very unfortunate reality that is taking place right now. So in all of this, we look at the Christian response. We look at what it means to have an ethos that says all are welcome, especially those in need. Right? Especially those in need. And it seems to kind of fly in the face of that because, yes, these are the most, if you want to say, hotbed of Islamic extremists. Therefore, where we need to focus on refugeeism. Because it's Muslims who are persecuted for their religious beliefs. And if you look at what we know of this situation in Quebec, these were Muslims attacking Muslims. It was not a Muslim against Christian. The vast majority of religious persecution in the world today are Muslims against Muslims. Because we have Sunni and Shiite primarily who don't see eye to eye. Generally speaking, those of the extremist bend are extreme Sunnis who are already a more traditional interpretation of Islamic teaching than that of Shiites. Depending on who you ask, how you ask it, of course, right? I mean, but that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, and there's been all kinds of conversation. Well, there's only a small percentage of Christians who are ever allowed in as refugees compared to that of Muslims. Yes, because it's a small percentage of Christians in these countries. They're already small percentages. But it's Christians and Muslims alike who get this type of oppression. And not only oppression, persecution. because of what they believe, because they don't believe the way the extremists believe. And then to understand true refugeeism, which when I say true refugeeism, like there's something other than that. It's refugeeism. It's the same way. This is an international process of accepting a group of individuals who meet a certain criteria, then clarifying that criteria through a vetting process before they go into countries that are willing to accept these refugees. And you can make yourself willing to accept refugees, and then you kind of get who is sent your way. We are very excited. I serve on the board of Catholic Charities for my diocese, and we were talking about this opportunity to bring in Syrian refugees. And how exciting is that, considering the challenges that are there and the fact that we would be giving new hope to these refugees coming from Syria with an opportunity to resettle in America and to have a new lease on life and a new focus and a new opportunity. That's what we were looking so forward to. And now, at least for the next 4 months, maybe indefinite, we don't know. It's an indefinite ban on Syrian refugees. So that particular program that we saw as a beautiful opportunity to show our solidarity with the people of Syria and really the people of the world as a result of that, and carving out and allowing the funding to take place to make it happen, all of that now on hold, at best, perhaps completely gone. So this is the unfortunate reality. This is the dynamic that we face. And I think that when we knee-jerk or politicize or theatricize, is that a word? I don't know. Dramatize, perhaps, these situations, this is what we get. We get kind of a bizarre sort of, I don't know. And the one thing, if, kind of like I said, you know, hey, Trump's got a heck of a work ethic. He's working a weekend. He's busting through these executive orders. If there's one thing you can say for the guy, he's making good on his promises, at least in the sense that he said he's going to do this, he's going to do that, he's going to do that. Now, I think what I said all along, if you recall, is I don't know that you could trust that he's got your best interests at heart. Go back, listen to my recordings. They're all in podcasts that are out there. Go back and look at my Facebook posts. I've said, this guy's got his own interests in mind. And there's a reason why certain things are done the way they're done. Kyrgyzstan, right? Kyrgyzstan. The Boston bombers came from there. Why are they not on the list? Saudi Arabia, the terrorists of the 9/11 hijacking, these were primarily Saudi Arabians. Why are they not on the list, right? So we've got some real precedent that we could say, well, there's problems in these countries, but yet we're not doing that. So there's got to be reasons why this specific, and there are those who are saying, well, the Obama administration had already identified these, and President Trump is just coming in and picking up where that left off, making good on where this is. But I don't know. I think there's maybe something we don't know, right? Maybe something that we've yet to see in all of this. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
If you enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you. You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Business Insider, I think, was the post that I put on my Facebook page regarding the one thing that all, I said rich people, I would say successful individuals all have in common. And I've been talking about this Tim Ferriss book, which I haven't read, Tools of Titans, but I've heard a couple of things about it and was listening to one of his a podcast interview, I think from Business Insider. This may be Forbes. I confuse Forbes and Business Insider frequently because I read them both. And Entrepreneur, I read them all. But anyway, so this Tim Ferriss talking about that you are the average of the five people you hang out with the most, right? That's kind of interesting. You're the average. Average of those five, whoever they are, whatever they are, whatever they're doing, which maybe. I believe that individuals are individuals and some do what they do regardless of who they hang out with. But I think it's interesting when you see this story that basically says the one thing that's in common of successful and in this case, rich, whatever, right? Do you want to be rich? You want to be successful? You want to make a living or do you want to make a difference? Right? Those are kind of the questions you need to ask. But regardless of one thing, one common denominator among it all, is they refuse to hang out with pessimists. They refuse to have pessimists in their sphere of influence. And not to say that we shun anyone, or we just simply choose, okay, you know, you can choose who you hang out with, or who you listen to, or who you expose yourself to. And those with a true pessimistic attitude, which is not necessarily opposition. You can take spirited opposition, criticism, devil's advocacy. You can take all of that with a spark of energy and an opportunity to move something and to create, you know, that friction that can come from that. It can be traction, right? I mean, friction is traction. We got to understand that. There's something that can actually propel. But when someone's just pessimistic, it's really, really difficult. And yeah, I'm trying to work this out with my 9-year-old. My wife and I are trying to get out. He's kind of in a pessimistic mode. And to try to get out of that and to try to say, look, you know, don't present yourself with self-fulfilling prophecy. That's what that's what pessimism does. Is if you see everything as bleak and everything as bad, you will fulfill that prophecy. And I think this is one of the things that challenges me when I look at this Trump presidency. If you listen to this inaugural address, which I know wasn't written by him, but it just makes this country to be the absolute bleakest, worst, challenged, scary, backwards, messed up, you name it, just bad news. It's all bad news. Everything is all bad. But, you know, we can fix it. Fortunately, we got the solutions. Two simple things. Buy American, hire American. It's fixed. Everything's fixed. And it's an unfortunate message. It is a message of pessimism. It's not a message of optimism. It's not a message of let's come together and bring everyone together and let's find ways to work together. That's not what we hear. No, what we hear in this is it's all bad. So it'll be interesting. We've seen the first military operation that I would say didn't end well. It ended with a commando being killed in this Yemen squabble with Al-Qaeda operatives there, and apparently had been planned even before the Trump administration took place. But what do we do with that, right? So now, what does that mean? Does that mean we continue to do the things we've done before, drone strikes? And because, I mean, we did a lot of that. We did a whole lot of that under the Obama administration. I find it interesting, quite frankly, that many liberals just seem to kind of turn a blind eye to that. It's kind of like what we're seeing right now with there are those who are such Trump supporters, they're going to turn a blind eye to anything else they see. Now, Trump supporters would value attacking Al-Qaeda. There's no doubt about that. But I can't imagine that there was a lot of Obama supporters who really were behind the drone strikes that took place repeatedly under the Obama administration. I just don't know that would necessarily jibe with those who are truly liberal. Same is true for, I can't imagine that even the Osama bin Laden attack, the way it took place. And I mean, if you're generally speaking, I mean, I think true liberals are not war hawks. They don't necessarily want to find the U.S. in these international challenges in other countries with some degree of aggression. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I don't understand liberalism enough to know. But I think that when you look at the history of the Obama administration, we kind of seem to be continuing that. Certainly this attack was planned and it is what it was. And now where do we go and what happens next in this Trump administration? Time will tell. But are we going to get more aggressive? Are we going to be more out there? Or is it going to be kind of a covert operation? I don't know. Now, the one thing we talked about a lot over the weekend was this situation with torture being considered, promoted, applauded, certainly potentially utilized in whatever way imaginable, because there are those who are convinced it works. I've seen Senator John McCain come out and speak boldly and say, no, not in our America, not in my America, essentially, will this happen. The maverick that he is, proving that he is, as he was called on the campaign trail when he ran for president, that this is a guy who is going to do things a little bit differently. And obviously willing to step out of the conservative, support, I suppose. Not just falling in line behind the president and everything he says, but being willing to challenge that. And I think we have to applaud that. Because if that's where we're going, to where we're just going to be, anything goes, doesn't matter, anything goes. We're going to protect Americans. Whether we need to be protected or not, who cares? We're just going to do it. And as a result of that, dignity is compromised because we're torturing individuals. That's some bad news. We need to be above that. We need to be beyond and nowhere near anything that undignified. It's a bizarre disconnect, because as Catholics, we have this understanding of moral decision making, which is kind of a little snapshot of a bigger morality, which says, let's use this same litmus test for human dignity, which I've said many times, I've posted on a number of occasions and talked about it repeatedly here. Is everything moral? All of these elements, object, intent, outcome, do they all add up? Same questions can be asked. Is everything dignified? Right? You don't have to use morality there, because I think morality, quite frankly, can be somewhat subjective. I think we know that, but I'm not sure that dignity necessarily is that subjective. I think dignity is kind of objective. I think we could look at this and say, well, that's probably not the most dignified thing. And maybe I'm wrong, but I think there's a degree of objectivity and dignity that is different than that of morality, because there are those who could certainly justify all kinds of things that one may not deem as moral that the other does. But when it comes to treatment of human beings, I think, and I may be wrong, but I think we can measure dignity in ways that we can't morality. I think There's a little bit more black and whiteness there. Because there are some who would think, well, there's nothing immoral about consensual sex, let's say, right? Nothing immoral about that because it's consensual. Even if one or both of the parties happen to be married, let's say. You know, it's nobody's getting hurt. It's all consensual. They could consider, they could deem that to be moral within their own construct of the way they see things. But then you got to ask, well, what about the parties that involved? Is it dignified to them when something of this nature is taking place? Where's their dignity? Are we treating them with dignity? Because they're in this equation. That's just one example to where morality can be completely subjective to the individual, but if you begin to pull it back and start weighing dignity, now we get some other issues. Torture? You can say, well, it's certainly moral. Yeah, saving people because we're getting information. Really pull it back and look, is it dignified to treat people this way? More to come. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back in a moment.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back in Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Could be seeing a new title for the Blessed Virgin this year with Co-Redemptrix. Talking about this for some time. Could there be yet another Marian dogma issued? 100th anniversary of the Fatima apparition. And there's been a lot of talk, and I think that some private revelation around this where it comes to this beginning of something beautiful that is a result of the 100th anniversary of this apparition. Now, again, this isn't confirmed church teaching or accepted revelation necessarily, but I personally know those who are anticipating, they've been just waiting for 2017. It's like, it's all going to happen. It's all going to happen, whatever that is. Trumpet sounding, right? Trumpets sounding, who knows? But the interesting thing is that Fatima, if you look at what our Blessed Mother prescribed, it was a prescription of prayer. And she ended up going to these peasant children in Fatima, Portugal. Fatima, Portugal, named after a daughter of Muhammad. And taught the children to pray in the kneeling fashion that is identical to the Muslim prayer form. Now, all of this is documented in the book Fatima for Today, which Father Andrew Apostoli does a terrific job breaking down Fatima and kind of showing its relevancy to today and what it's all about. And this was released when? 2012, maybe? I think. Maybe earlier. But some really good examination of this apparition and really what it means for us as far as unity. Because what was happening at the time was just an upheaval in 1917 with a world war emerging and the challenges that were the global crisis, just a global crisis. We were talking earlier about pessimism versus optimism and all of this. And, you know, there are those who think this is the worst of times. There are those who think and have thought any time is the worst of times. And there are those who think, oh, it's the best of times. It just got to kind of see how we look at it. But I would say that there are similarities, maybe not truly in the sense of one country against the other, but there is unrest, there's upheaval, there are challenges, there are wars and rumors of wars, we know this. And what could this opportunity mean? An additional Marian dogma, and then the chance for the world to see, perhaps, at least a little bit more light shed on this than there has been when it comes to the role of the Blessed Mother and kind of what our Catholic faith teaches, which, you know, we have these times. And one thing I would say is Pope Francis has kind of kept it there. I saw a post on Facebook earlier from last October, which kind of seemed to be about today and basically Pope Francis saying those who don't accept refugees are not really Christian. It seemed as though it was hinged on the recent action by the president, and when in reality this was from the time of the campaign, but really more just in general talking about the crisis that we're facing, especially when it comes to the Syrian refugee crisis. And himself putting his money where his mouth is and welcoming a refugee family into the Vatican. So you can't say, well, this guy's a talker. That's all he's doing. He's just talking up a storm. And unfortunately, we can be accused of that. I talk a lot on the show, of course, and I talk a lot on Facebook. Generally, I'm not a real talkative guy. I will have conversation, but I don't talk just to hear myself talk. But I do talk about things that I deem important, and I talk about things that I think has to be discussed. But I don't do it to make myself the center of attention. I do it to bring these issues to the center of attention. And it's not that I'm a know-it-all. It's not that I'm trying to school anyone. It's not that I'm trying to scold anyone. I'm simply saying, look at this, look at this, look at this. Let's see what we're talking about here. And then over the weekend, I was criticized to some degree of like, well, Leo, you talk all the time. Well, what's your action plan? What are you really doing? Right? Which, I don't know. I find interesting because I think those who know me will ask quite the opposite. When are you going to stop? When are you going to like maybe not do something? Because you're always doing something. But the unveiling came this weekend on Facebook of me saying, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to, and I'm stepping away from that. I'm opening the store, I'm facilitating it, bringing a team together, and then I'm walking away from it, at least in the sense of day-to-day anything. I'll be there to resource and support, and of course, always in the back, but it's not my thing. It can't be my thing. Because there's got to be women coming together to do this, to bring the credibility to the table to say this is legit. It can't be just a bunch of guys. Or we're going to be accused of mansplaining and being the guys like doing the legislation. That's not the way this is going to work. It's going to work with women, professional women, with incredible pedigree and credibility that says they are here to make this work. And the goal is the vision that I posted and discussed regarding Father Thomas Loya. And what we talked about last week, and then he released this essay on the March for Life date on Friday about this is his vision, a Starbucks of women's health, essentially meaning on every corner. You can't look around without seeing women are important. Women are so important that here's free health clinics, not that do abortions, not to give away birth control, but they're here to do the things that all of the ones who claim they do all of these things for women don't. You want cancer screening? You want mammograms? You want HPV screening? You want pregnancy testing? You want to get an ultrasound? You want prenatal care? You name it, all of this is there. It's all there. And it's free to anyone who wants it. Insurance, no insurance, whatever. Medicaid, Obamacare, whatever you happen to have. It's yours. You can have it. Now, that's a big, crazy vision, but it's a seed Father Thomas Loya planted. I loved it so much. I said, Father, I know enough women who are in the medical profession, and I'll put the word out and we'll see if we can assemble something that can make this work. I know pro-life women who would love to be a part of this. And sure enough, praise God, over the weekend planted this seed and there's response to it, and we're moving forward with a task force. We're making this happen. So, not that this is about me, but don't accuse me of inaction, right? You can talk and you can act. You don't have to be one or the other. And I think those who act should talk about it. I think those who act should discuss this and should cultivate thought and discussion. That's part of this. I don't think you should just be all action. And of course, we know that no one needs to be all talk. So there's a balance. There's a both and to everything. But there is now an action plan. There's a task force being formed. There are early leaders emerging. And I trust this thing is going to move forward. And we're going to resource it. And we're going to find ways to resource it. We're going to find ways to help. Because when you get so specific on mission, whenever your mission is identifiable and measurable, definable, you know, this is when we now have the real opportunity to move it forward. We could do that. We can make this happen. So again, my goal is to wind it up, step away, get this thing moving, and to resource it, but certainly ask for your prayers and also your consideration. If it's something that you would be interested in or you know someone who may be, then there's opportunity to grow this and to get it out there. And it doesn't matter where you are. Geography is of no consequence because we can manage this from across the globe as we can with everything in social media. That's a beautiful thing about it. So yes, putting the plan to action. And I think we can reduce the desire, the demand for abortion to almost zero if we truly have the resources available and we show that women are important and we show that we're there to provide those resources. It could be done. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.